must I live the life of a millionaire.
Welcome to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free call-in number for this broadcast is 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody, followed by the number 8. Or, if you're currently, recently, or about to be homeless, you may also call 1-866-LEFT-OUT. The teen years are a time of questioning, which makes them hard enough. But they get a lot harder when the questions revolve around things like, how am I going to eat today? Or where am I going to sleep tonight? Tens of thousands of teens across America are coping with homelessness before they even know how to cope with life. Teens who live in houses will ask homeless teens what it's like. Right after this.
All across America, cities and towns are facing similar problems. Springfield, Massachusetts is typical. The lack of affordable housing made headlines this past summer when a group of homeless people set up camp on the grounds of Springfield's St. Michael's Cathedral. Sanctuary City, as the camp was called, moved to an empty lot behind Open Pantry, an agency that serves the poor, after Springfield Diocese officials told camp residents they had to move. The residents say they became homeless for various reasons.
This time it was like my choice. It was either stay in a violent situation or leave it. I don't think everyone chooses to be homeless. I mean, things happen and we end up this way. It's not like I haven't been here before. It's not something that I planned, but it's not easy to make all your bill payments. It's difficult sometimes.
I was just recently released from incarceration, and I've been filling out applications everywhere. I was convicted of a drug charge, and it's hard for me to get housing because evictions and drug charges is the first thing they look for on the application. And I was denied several times, and it's just hard for an ex-convict to get work and to seek housing. And I really don't think it's fair. Because I paid my dues for the crime that I committed, and people change.
People often blame the homeless for their plight. But Bill Miller, who oversees several programs for the homeless in Northampton, Massachusetts, thinks that view is simplistic.
We'd rather, I think, as a society, oftentimes blame the individual who is homeless and say, if you would only correct the flaws in your personality, then you could have housing. Well, that's really, it's unfair. The truth is that they're poor and not able to, oftentimes not able to compete for the higher paying jobs. There are people who are never going to be able to make a lot of money, and they need to live somewhere too.
60% of the state's homeless, surveyed by the Center for Social Policy at UMass Boston, said they lost their housing due to financial problems. Bill Miller says people who become homeless have few resources to fall back on during financial crisis.
You know, when you talk about the fabric of society, people who we see in the shelters literally are on the edge of that fabric, so they only have the one or two threads that they hang on to. And if something happens to that one thread, you know, they just drift in and out of homelessness.
Affordable housing is defined as costing no more than 30% of income. A person working a full-time job at minimum wage takes home just over $1,000 a month, which is about one quarter the income needed to afford the average two-bedroom apartment in Massachusetts. The Hamden Hampshire Housing Partnership, or HAP, oversees the area's Section 8 housing voucher program. Peter Gagliardi is HAP's executive director.
If you take that $1,000 a month and you compare it to the average housing cost, not just the rent, but also the utilities. In our program of some 3,800 households, the average housing cost was $778. It doesn't take much to figure out that leaves between, you know, $220 to maybe $300 a month to pay for all other expenses.
It's hard to know for certain how many homeless people there are, but many say the problem is getting worse. Michael Ann Busey is the director of Arise for Social Justice, the Springfield organization that helped to organize Sanctuary City.
It's getting much, much worse. I can tell you Sanctuary City is just the tip of the iceberg of homelessness and people who are at risk of homelessness at least once a year and sometimes almost monthly.
Busey says that beneath the tip of that iceberg are people who are currently in public shelter, people who are homeless but not in shelter, and
all the nearly 1,000 people a month who are evicted primarily for non-payment of rent, and we've got a big problem.
Compounding that problem, a shortage of temporary shelter and permanent affordable housing. For the Homelessness Marathon, I'm Francesca Rihanna.
People moving out, people moving in, why? Because of the color of the skin.
Every angry kid has threatened to run away from home, but how many actually do? Do they get any further than the local ice cream store or a friend's house?
Not usually. At the end of the day, most end up back in their warm, cozy beds, safe at home with a family that loves them.
Unfortunately, not all of us are that lucky. Some teens leave home never to return. Others don't have families or places to stay at all.
There are many reasons a teen can become homeless. Their homes may be unsafe.
They could be unwanted.
Living on the street somehow becomes the only option.
Being homeless is possibly one of the most harrowing experiences one can live through, but especially for teens. Still not of legal age to get an apartment or even a job, young people face a unique and difficult struggle.
Even their noblest efforts may be vain, simply because they aren't old enough. Can you imagine living a life like this? Hi, we're your hosts, Johanna Greenberg
and Aaron Maloney. Welcome to Blunt Youth Radio Project.
We're here tonight at the Preble Street Teen Center in Portland, Maine. We're sitting in a large room, which is called the Drop-In, where homeless teens come for meals, support, or just a place to be. There's a kitchen, couches, television, showers, and a laundry room.
Around the room, there are phones for calling about jobs or talking to friends. Out back, learning opportunities are available, along with mental health services and caseworkers to talk to about housing and other services.
Right now, we are about to speak to a few of these young people who have lived and are living the hardships of homelessness.
Before we begin, we'd like to give a special thanks to Jessica Rosenberg here at Preble Street Teen Center in Portland
and the friendly folks at Maine Public Radio for their technical support. First of all, we'd like to inform our listeners that this is a call-in show. If you have any questions, comments, or would like to speak your mind, we'd love to hear from you. Call us at 1-877-NOBODY-8 or at 1-866-LEFT-OUT. That's 1-877-NOBODY-8, N-O-B-O-D-Y, number 8, or at 1-866-LEFT-OUT, L-E-F-T-O-U-T.
Our first guest tonight is Devin. Now 20, Devin has spent 4 years struggling with homelessness. He left his home at age 16, and since then has been in state care, living in transitional homes, independent living programs, and mental care systems. He has managed to overcome these difficulties and now lives in his own apartment. Welcome, Devin.
Hello.
Next, we have Maggie. She is now 17, but she became homeless at age 12. Now she is an advocate for homeless teens. Welcome, Maggie.
Hey, guys.
To start off, I guess we have a caller, Robert from Santa Cruz. Hello, Robert. Do we have
Robert?
Seems like we're having technical difficulties. So, Devin, would you like to tell us a little bit about how you became homeless?
Like you said, when I was 16, I moved in with my grandmother from my parents, and she ended up getting cancer, and I got sent back to my parents, but that wasn't safe for me at the time, so I ended up running away, and I got brought up to Portland here, mm-hmm. where I yes. went to an adolescent girls' shelter okay. and got placed into state custody.
Okay, that sounds really difficult to deal with as a young person. Maggie, could you tell us a little about your circumstances?
When I was 12 years old, I came out to my parents as being a lesbian, and my mother was okay with it, and my father completely wanted to disown me, and he kicked me out on the street, and I was on the street from anywhere from a month to 2 months before I was allowed back into my house at all.
Wow. 12 years old, that's
yeah, pretty rough.
Yeah, that seems, I mean, both of you were really young when you were forced to live on your own and fend for yourself. That's definitely something that most teenagers, or kids even, definitely don't have to deal with.
Yeah, so what do you, Devin, what do you think the most difficult thing in your life is or was?
I think it's pretty much, I don't like to be judged on what I do or what I think.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing, is that people think what they think is right is what's right for me when they don't know me.
Wow. That sounds like something that is universally felt, and I find that, I mean, I think everyone finds that. That's interesting to know that it's across the board. How do you feel you've been judged?
I know I've seen outright plain discrimination about me being homeless around this city, but it's just a big thing where people judge me and think I'm just this homeless kid.
Right.
Who isn't doing anything in life and doesn't want to do anything, when that's not what I am and what I do.
Yeah, that seems to be the big, the false view of homeless people, is that they want to be homeless. I think that's the biggest misconception about homeless people in general.
Just a reminder to our listeners that you can call in at 1-877-NOBODY-8 or at 1-866-LEFT-OUT.
Maggie, what have you found to be the most difficult aspect of being homeless?
Especially for me, seeing as I was kicked out for my sexuality beliefs, it's hard to be on the street even when you're a teenager, and especially when you're younger, and you get a lot of awkward and uncomfortable situations that when you're that young, you haven't really been taught to get yourself out of.
Right.
And so when you're getting discriminated against, or even if somebody's, you know, trying to advance you in a way you don't want to, it's hard to know how to get out of those situations when you haven't had that kind of life experience yet.
Yeah.
Sounds really hard.
I think that seems like the main concern about teenagers in specific being homeless, is that they really don't have the life experience, like I heard on that previous feature. You know, they don't know how to deal with life, let alone fending for themselves.
Another, like, a common teen thing is like, well, I get to get my driver's license. And it's just like, yes, finally I can be on my own and I'm independent. But does that happen to you?
Devin?
For me, I got put into state custody, and the rules in that is that I'm not allowed to get my license until I'm 18.
Wow.
I received my permit. I went to driver's ed when I was 16, but since then I have completed my hours for being eligible for my license, but I didn't have anybody there to record it, and from bouncing around I wasn't able to keep paperwork, and I still have yet to get my license and get the money for it.
Wow. That seems like it would make it really hard to become independent, to get a job, to be able to bring yourself up in life. Have you found that, like, there are times that you wish you had a license?
Definitely. It's a big thing where, money-wise, it would definitely be a lot cheaper to live out of town,
right?
But because of the services that are provided in Portland, mm-hmm. that you kind of get stuck in here, and without a vehicle you can't kind of be where you want. You have to be where everything you need is.
Right.
Yeah. Do you plan on giving your driver's license, or trying to ever?
Yes, I am working on that right now. I'm just working on finding someone with a reliable vehicle that I can practice on,
right,
and then just go for my license and get the money for that.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. One of the things that you guys both have in common is that you are advocates for homeless people and youth. Maggie, could you tell us a little bit about how you're involved with that?
I've been doing advocacy work all across the board ever since I was homeless, because when you're out on the street, you don't get the services you need as often as you should. Even if they're put out there, nobody really pushes you to do that. Nobody's pushing you, you don't get that support. And so I do a lot of advocacy work with queer youth. I do a lot of advocacy work with homeless youth, or with youth just in general. The Teen Center offers us a lot of ways to vent. We have radical acceptance, which isn't as much advocacy as just getting the word out there of what it's like to be homeless and the experiences we've had. I used to work with a group that supports queer youth, but I don't work with them any longer. I do work with domestic violence. Wow. And the Take Back the Night yearly rally. And I just do a lot of advocacy work on my own, going to high schools and speaking there about what it's like being homeless, being queer, any of that.
That sounds very productive. And
Right now we have a call from Bob from Vancouver. Bob, hello?
Do we have a Bob on the line? Okay, seems like we don't have a call, but we were talking about advocacy. Devin, recently you went to a conference in D.C. How does that relate to you?
I went with the Teen Center here. It was a National Network for Youth conference. It was a conference that had about 2,000 youth.
Wow.
From all over the United States. So I got to meet kids from Hawaii and California.
Cool.
And get to know about the programs that they run down there and how the stuff that they implement, how we could use it to work for us.
That sounds really productive.
Yeah. But as advocates, or as somebody who's experienced it, homelessness and these hard experiences, what would you think that the general public should know about anything you've experienced, that how they could help, or what you wish they'd understand?
I know with me personally, when I was first homeless, I didn't really understand what homelessness was. I mean, mm-hmm. I just figured it was kids who got angry at their parents and left.
Right.
So being out on the street, you see people who cross the other side of the street to get away from you, people who will just look horribly in direction, people where you walk past them and they say really rude and awkward things. And I think as the general public, the most you can do is just, even a smile can make somebody's day when you have no place to go. Just knowing there's somebody out there who thought you were worth a smile really changes an entire day.
Wow, yeah. That's
smile
powerful.
More, no.
What about you, Devin? Is there anything that you think that people should know about homelessness and youth?
That it is really hard to do.
Yeah.
But the friends you make during that, you really do find out who your true friends are, and who's actually going to be there by your side, and who's going to stab you in the back. And you learn a lot of things about people and just interacting with society becomes so much on a deeper level when you're homeless.
Right.
That it's really hard to do, but afterwards you gain all that knowledge from learning that.
Wow. That sounds a lot similar to teens around the world, but it seems on a higher level to be more powerful. We'd like to thank Maggie for being with us.
Thank you guys for letting me have a voice.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Right now we're going to have Chris. And Chris is currently 19 and has been struggling with homelessness for many, many years. And recently he has been traveling, basically to find himself. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Thank you.
Similarly to Devin and Maggie, could you just give us a brief overview of how you became homeless and how you got here today?
It's been homeless pretty much on and off for about 10 years. And I'm 19 years old, so it's been quite a while.
Wow.
It all started when my mom killed my dad, and I ended up moving with my uncle. He died.
Wow.
So that's how it all started.
That sounds pretty rough.
Yeah, that sounds like a scary experience for a young child to go through. We have a caller, Bob from Vancouver.
Let's try this again.
Hi.
Hi there. Yes, we can. What's your question, Bob?
A lot of you have already asked, but you know, there's always this myth we hear that people, and maybe you want to put it aside. So, is we always hear this myth, well, people are homeless because they want to be, and I have a hard time believing that. And that's my first question. Could you guess answer how they feel about that?
Yeah.
Personally, I've been homeless for quite some time. I have no source of income. I've been trying very hard lately, and for quite some time to get out of this homelessness. I joined the military for a while. That was pretty good. As soon as I got out of the military, I pretty much got completely lost. I had nowhere to go, nowhere to turn. I've never known how to really do anything except for be homeless, but it's not something I really want to do. I've been getting jobs on and off, and I've been trying really hard to get out of this mess.
Yeah. So what you're saying is it's not a planned lifestyle. It's just something that you can't get into. What's the factor of people who are mentally retarded that are homeless? That used to be, at least my knowledge was, that a fair percentage of them was, you know, had some kind of mental illness. Is that still prevalent, or what's the status on that?
I'm not sure about the exact stats or anything, but I know a lot of my friends are perfectly not that mentally challenged or whatever.
Thank you, Bob.
Sure.
For calling.
We're going to have to go to another caller. Yeah. Right now we have Harold from Maryland. Harold, are you there?
Hello, this is Harrell. Is nobody on the air still? I guess
nobody?
Not.
Nobody? No.
Nope, this is Blunt.
We're from Portland, Maine.
Okay, the host in the first hour is gone. I just wanted to thank him as well.
I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah.
And is he gone for the hour?
Yes.
Okay, I just happened to know him from 10 years ago, but you are obviously equally to be congratulated for doing this.
Thank you.
I had a comment on general homelessness, but I think it ties into teens in that what can be said about homelessness in general is
what's that?
All the more true for teens. On both, you know, demonizing homelessness people by saying they're choosing it, or demonizing people who are drug addicted. On the drug addiction front, you know, reading BBC and other things online, the rest of the industrialized world treats that as a health problem. We seem to be the only Western country that wants to demonize people instead of treating them, which is what they do in Europe.
Right. Yeah.
And if that's true for people in general, it's certainly even more true for young people.
Definitely.
And second comment, as far as choosing it, if someone says ask me would they like them to cut one arm off or both my arms, and I say, well, please cut one arm off, they could say, look, you chose that.
Yeah.
By which I mean to say that whenever you say someone chose something, you always have to step back and say they chose it under what alternatives did they have.
Definitely.
Having an attitude of not demonizing people and treating it like a social problem to help people
right,
with in Europe is what I'd like to hear comments on.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Harold. We have what do you think about that, Chris?
Do you guys have any experience with that kind of thing? Being looked down upon for either drug use or homelessness?
Well, I don't personally do any other kind of drug. I do drink from occasion.
Mm-hmm.
I was a pretty bad binge drinker for a couple months there in the past.
Right.
But mm-hmm. as a matter of fact, it was a girl from Europe that made me change my mind.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Devin, do you?
For me, mine's kind of complex. Mm-hmm. For one, my choice of being homeless, it was either that or the alternative of being in a place where I didn't know if I was going to be able to make it through the night, mm-hmm. either from other people or from myself. But getting through that, I do have a lot of mental illnesses that add up, and in turn, I'm supposed to take a lot of meds, but I choose to smoke marijuana instead because it helps me with all the substitutes for the meds, which are so full of chemicals and stuff. I would mm-hmm. much rather take something herbal that doesn't have as many side effects than something that makes me want to sleep all day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that really speaks to the fact he was talking about yeah. how you really have to ask what people are choosing between before you judge their decisions.
Yeah.
We have another caller. This is Catherine from Acebelo, Ohio.
Hello, Catherine.
Hi. My name's Catherine, mm-hmm. and I'm actually calling to make a comment because I chose not to be abused, and because I chose not to be abused, I chose to be homeless, and I was 14.
Wow.
And for 3 years, whether or not I ate depended on how cunning I could be in my own resources and the kindness of strangers.
Yeah.
And I was probably in my late 20s before I was able to say, you know what, I have survived the abuse of my teens.
Right.
And I think I'd like to address all of the teens who are in the situation where they feel they've chosen homelessness for a specific reason. Whatever the reason is that they choose to be homeless, it had to be worse being there where they were than being alone or nearly alone. That wondering if you were going to go hungry is better than wondering who's going to climb in your bed when you're 12.
Right.
And
yeah.
that the feelings of hopelessness and helplessness that you have from being homeless, don't let adults who demand such extreme respect from you but fail to give any back at all, don't let them take the central part of you. Build on your own strength, because your choice to be homeless was in itself a strength and something you can build from.
Wow, that's
yeah.
that's really powerful. Thank you
Thank
for
you,
sharing
Catherine.
Your experiences. Well, like she said, it really does take a lot of strength, and I was just curious for both of you, who are your inner strength, like where do you get that? Mm-hmm. Devin, do you?
I think I get it from everything, no matter what happens to me. I mean, just seeing what other people have done for me and for themselves makes me learn how to approach a situation and see the results of taking one path than taking another.
Yeah.
So I can just, yeah.
That sounds
yeah.
like it works, the inspiration of
yeah,
the people you know. What about you, Chris?
My inspiration just comes from pretty much learning. I really like to learn, and I try really hard to get by and figure out things as I go. Sometimes it doesn't work as well as I'd like it to, but
that sounds like
that's my main goal and inspiration.
Wow, that sounds like very productive, and that sounds like it it really gets you somewhere. Kind of related, support system, friends, family, where do you turn when you need help or someone to talk to?
But first, this is a call-in show, so you can call us at 1-877-NOBODY-8 or at 1-866-LEFT-OUT. Okay, go on with your answers.
My support systems would have to be the teen center here, and I have a core group of friends that I hang out with all the time, so definitely them, no matter what, over anything, and my mom and my sister.
That's great.
Yeah.
Chris, too.
For support, probably the Portland Teen Center. I had a little bit while I was in some of the other states, from maybe the Salvation Army and St. Vincent de Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
It just sounds like it's great that you guys can come here and have somewhere to go, like a place just for teens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of a unique thing. Long term, I know that Devin had said earlier that he just kind of lives day to day because there's just so much to worry about. But where do you see yourself 5-10 years from now, Chris?
Right now, I'm working on getting a job, mm-hmm. and hopefully I can keep this job and get promoted, and I would like to eventually get a family started. I'm just trying to settle down, get things going, get my head out of my ass, be straight.
That sounds great.
Well, good luck with that. What do you wish the world could understand about a homeless teenager?
Chris, you haven't answered that. It's a tough question. It's a lot to say.
Well, I know when I was trying to get a job for so long, everybody wants experience. Mm.
Yeah.
And you can't get experience unless anybody's willing to give you a shot. Nobody really wants to try to give you any kind of experience. It seems like one big circle.
Yeah.
I can relate to that because I've been trying to get jobs, but I obviously don't need it as much as you do.
You were talking about before the circle, if you need money to make money, and then in order to make money, you need money.
Yeah. We have another call from Dan from Portland, Maine. Dan?
Do we have Dan on the line?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, this is Dan. I wanted to ask to the homeless teens, Maggie and Devin.
Yeah, we have Chris and Devin on right now. But
I know you have more important things to worry about, whether you're gonna get where you're gonna get your next meal and where you're gonna live. But I was wondering, when you're looking at kids from high school and looking at them, do you think that how do you feel when they're going off to college and you're still homeless and you're not doing the things that they're doing? And do you think that you're just going to, when you're 18, go into the workforce and try to stabilize yourself? Or do you think that you would try to work and go to college and do the normal things that kids do when you get to 18 because you'll have more opportunities? Do you think you'll have more opportunities? Or that's just my question.
Well, I'm trying to get find out what kind of grants and stuff I can get. I'd really like to go to school. It's really hard for me right now.
Do you think that you have more of a chance, or would you really like to go to college, or are you more concentrated on?
I'd really like to go to school and get something better for myself.
Cool. That's good that you have resources to be able to reach those goals.
Right. And I just want to compliment you, all of you, on your courage.
So, getting a job is kind of out of the question right now, because of pressure that I put on myself. I volunteer a lot, and I am working on going back to college and finishing it. I just want to make sure I get everything in place so that I can succeed this time. So
that's sounds like a great idea to kind of set yourself up for success rather than kind of just go into things.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah,
no
thank
problem.
You, Dan. That was a great question.
Yeah, bye.
We are almost out of time, but
reminder, this is a call-in show, 1-877-NOBODY-8 or 1-866-LEFT-OUT.
One last question. Apparently there are apparent differences in your life from normal teens with homes, but what would you say is different about your life besides the fact that you're homeless? What sets you apart, do you think? Either of you?
Well, seeing as I haven't had a home in quite some time, I've had a lot of opportunity to travel and meet new people. I've been pretty much in all of the states. I've been to several different countries in Europe. And
wow.
I've been doing a lot of traveling, not just trying to find myself, but also trying to find a home.
Great. That sounds like a very exciting experience for any teen to have. What about you, Devin?
I just go through life and see what comes at me. And, some things have been difficult, but in the end, I'm happy where I am right now.
That's a good feeling to have. So. It seems like from Maggie and Chris and Devin that we have, you know, obviously being a homeless teen is really hard and difficult, but I think we've also come to learn that there are similarities, that we do experience the same feelings and ideas with friendship and finding themselves. And so I think that's a good thing for us to keep in mind, that just because someone's homeless doesn't mean that they're different.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I agree with her. And thank you, Chris and Devin and Maggie, for helping.
Yeah, thank you very much. This has been a special from Blunt Youth Radio Project.
Stay tuned all night for the rest of the Homelessness Marathon. Here's Nobody, your host.
Hi, everybody, and thank you very much to the Blunt Youth Radio Group from Portland, Maine. Good job, and I really enjoyed that, and I very much thank you for doing that. All right, folks out there, you think that I'm some kind of courageous radio broadcaster? No, you're wrong. I'm telling you, because I have two co-hosts. We're going to have an open mic hour. I'm going to have two co-hosts on the line to talk to people who come to the mic or who call in. But these are two people before whom I quake in terror, because I used to write a column for homeless papers, and these two gentlemen were my editors. So I wish to say a big welcome to my editors, Israel Bayer of Street Roots in Portland, Oregon, and Indio, editor of Street News in New York. Indio and Israel, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Can barely hear you, but welcome.
Good. Good to hear you. Israel, are you there? No, no Israel. Okay, Indio, it's just you and me for the moment.
Okay.
So what I want to do, I want to launch right into it, and I want to just start talking to people and let you talk to them. And we have a gentleman at the microphone. Sir, what is your name?
My name is Jose Manuel Figueroa.
Jose, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you, sir.
What would you like to say?
I'd like to comment on the homelessness issue, and I was homeless for a period of 6 months, and let me start saying, I come from Springfield, Massachusetts, and it's called Tent City. We were there, like I said earlier, 6 months, and let me tell you, it wasn't easy being in a tent, and you know, it's cold days, rainy days like this night. Kind of reminds me of when I was over there, because let me tell you, it's not an easy thing being cold and sleeping in a tent and, you know, having no food and stuff like that. Sometimes people will come, like volunteer and give us food from different, you know, restaurants and whatnot, but, you know, that wasn't always the case. Thank God for the soup kitchens that's available over in Springfield, Massachusetts, because they helped us with the meals and, you know, stuff like that. I became homeless. I'm originally from Boston, Massachusetts, and I came down to Springfield. And I became homeless because I was living with a friend of mine, and I didn't know at the time that he had a drug problem. And one thing led to another. He got evicted from his apartment, and I wound up in the streets, you know. And I was asking around where could I stay, and this gentleman told me that there's a men's and women's shelter, and I said, well, you know, let me know where it is. And he brought me over there. He was nice enough to bring me over there. And I gave him information. And I stayed there for 3 months. But when I was there at the homeless shelter, let me tell you, it wasn't a pretty sight. You know, it was dangerous. When I say dangerous, I'm referring when you go take a shower, there's people doing drugs in the shelter. In the shower room, in the place where you do your, you know, your necessities. And you go in there, you know, thinking that you're going to take your shower. Let me tell you, you know, you have to wash your back and wash your surroundings, because you never know a cuckoo, you know, somebody could hurt you. And the staff, I'm not saying that all places are run this way, but the staff that are there to watch over you, they don't care. And, you know, to, you know, see you, you know, hurt or whatever, because they don't really, you know, take information like who you are and whatnot. Actually, you could go in there and say you're John Wayne, you know, and they'll put that in your form and, you know, give us a fake social security number and whatnot, and, you know, you go from there. And you're laying down in your bed at night, you have to keep one eye open, one eye, you know, closed, because you never know somebody's going to beat you up or whatever, or take your sneakers, or take your, you know, what little things you have.
Okay, Jose, I want to, should I call you Jose or should I call you John Wayne?
Jose.
Okay, all right. Israel, I understand you're on the line now?
I am.
Okay, welcome. Israel, so Israel, would you or would Indio like to say something to Jose?
I'd like to say something real quick. I've been there, done that in New York. I stayed at Thompson Square Park many moons ago with the tent. And I also stayed in the shelters, and everything that you said happened to me also. They even threw people off the second tier in Brooklyn. The thing about it, you have people who were supposed to be security. They paid $500 and they got a city job. And what they did, they were selling drugs. And you're right about the bathroom. They were selling cookies, cigarettes, cocaine, wine, you name it, they claim it. The only thing is, with me, I fought back. And you're right, I couldn't sleep. You had to keep one eye open and one eye closed. Most of the time, I kept both of them open. The only way you could do, or the only thing I did, was ride on the subways because it was too dangerous in there. And then I found out about the street news, and I started selling the paper. And I also started going to the congressmen and to the assemblymen. They didn't give a crap, but the most important thing is you got to stay surviving. You got to keep on thinking positive. The most important thing, you can't give up. You got to keep going.
Israel, you've got in Portland, Oregon there, you've got a tent city. Do you think that gives more, better condition than, as Jose was saying, than living in the shelters and so forth?
I think it is one alternative. I don't think tent cities are necessarily the solution, but they are a way to bridge the gap between people sleeping on the streets and what shelter space or housing space is available. And in Portland, the community feels that the tent city is a viable solution for the short term until people are completely housed, until the people that want to be housed are housed. So we do look at the tent city as an alternative. I think oftentimes groups can be polarized against each other, and it's important that the tent city movement continues to stay on track and not be caught in semantics of pointing fingers at one another and just do the thing, if that makes sense.
Sure. Jose, I want to get to as many people as I can in this time, so you got another comment you want to make?
Sure. I just want to say real quickly, I know you have a lot of people waiting to be in line here and talk, that I at the time I was at the 10th city, it's also called Synchronized City. When I was there, I was told that I was going to get housing, I was going to get an apartment, that they were going to help me, so forth and so on. That was all crap, you know. And when I say crap, I say lightly, because I myself had to go out there and, you know, apply and get everything done. If it wasn't for my own footwork, I wouldn't be in a position that I am. Thank God I got an apartment. I'm not homeless any longer, but you know what? I will never forget where I come from. And, that's one thing that I will always have in my mind, in my spirit, in my heart, that I was once homeless. And for all the homeless people, my heart to you, God bless you, and never give up the hope, never give up That's all I have to say. It's my last words. Never give up. It's always somebody out there that's willing to help you. And don't give up the hope. Don't give up the faith. And God will always be there for you. Just believe in that.
Thank you very much, Jose. Thank you for that. All right, I just want to try and get it. We got to open mic time. I want to get everybody on that I can. So let's go to Ivy in San Francisco. Ivy, are you there?
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm good, Ivy. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I really appreciate this show that you have on right now. I wanted to share a little bit of my experience and, like, where I've come from and where I'm at now with everybody. I was raised in a pretty intense family where I ended up having to live in foster homes for 5 years, in group homes, and I got out when I was 13 years old, and I came home to a still broken home where there was domestic violence and family with drug addicts. And so I had to leave home basically around 15, and I was a punk rocker, and luckily, I feel like a lot of that saved my life because it taught me to take my life into my own hands, and I started squatting. And I didn't really want to turn to shelters because I was already had so much mistrust with bureaucracy, you know, going through the system really, really intensely and just not having faith in social workers and judges, just having to constantly be a part of this process that I felt like I had no voice in. So that was one thing that being a part of punk rock and the DIY, do-it-yourself kind of ethics, mm-hmm. and taking your health into your hand and learning about holistic health, it really helped me a lot. I just wanted to talk about how important that is. Like when you do feel like you can't go to shelters or you don't want to sleep on the streets, is finding a good building that is not being used, you know, and there's so many in so many cities.
Absolutely. We're going to have people actually talking about that whole movement later, but I want to note.
I did that for 5 years.
Good for you. I want to note, I was interviewed during the when I was off, and they were doing the thing for the teens from Maine. A guy from the New Haven Register interviewed me, said, well, are you ever surprised by things people say on the air? I said, all the time. And I want you to know, Ivy, you are the first person I've ever spoken to on the air who said punk rock saved your life, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's outstanding. Israel, you yourself, I know, are somebody who left home as a teen under difficult circumstances. Can you relate to what Ivy is saying?
Sure. It's a crazy world out there. But I think it's important to find other individuals and groups of people and organizations that are working together off of the main grid to be able to bring about the necessary changes that need to happen.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I wanted to give a couple of props out to here in the city, some referrals if anyone is listening in from San Francisco or coming through is there's a really great art studio that's open to anyone that has a kiln, it has paint supplies and everything. It's on Turk and Leavenworth Street in the Tenderloin, and it's called the Tenderloin Hospitality House Art Studio. It's a really great resource, and people can actually leave with their artwork and sell it on the street or go through a gallery they have and get a commission. That's a great place. And then there's a really great soup kitchen called Martin DePore on 16th and Potrero, and they have the option of vegetarian, non-vegetarian. And when I finally did move, I moved from Miami to the Bay Area when I was 15. I kind of bounced back and forth hopping trains. And then I accidentally came back in 97. I started volunteering for a place called Haight-Ashbury Youth Outreach Team. And they do a lot of work with kids who live in Golden Gate Park or live on Haight Street. And it's a great, great place. They're in between spaces right now. But I say for anyone to look for them. And they put out a really great resource guide that's really comprehensive that goes over mental health referrals, medical referrals, shelter, you know, you name it. It's a really good little book they put out every couple of years. And also, if anyone is interested in getting back into college, which I'm actually a junior now at San Francisco State University, I first started at City College. They have a homeless advocacy project that helps people go through the system, like getting enrolled, applying for financial aid through for the Pell Grant, and they really help people who are trying to integrate back in to something like college, and that's at City College, Community College, the main campus.
Ivy, I've got to move on, but I want to make sure I get the central point that you're making here, because
basically, I'm saying that it's my point is that there's a lot of hope out there, and I feel like there's all these resources that I was able to find over the years, and I wanted to share them with people who may listening in, that there is a lot out there, and also about what keeps people going inside, you know, and that's how I felt with when I was made my point about punk rock saving my life and squatting.
But what you seem to be saying is it's about self-empowerment to some degree.
Definitely, and having some kind of create, you know, having an outlet, a creative outlet, definitely kept me alive, like art and music.
Okay,
those things really helped me. There's actually an interesting documentary called Aging Out that recently came out that follows three people who battle with homelessness that age out of foster homes, and I definitely tell people to look out for that. It's called Aging Out.
You know, I adopted my kids out of the foster system, so I'm quite familiar with it, and I just want to say I congratulate you for getting as far as you have. It's an important topic, the one you're raising, too, about the foster system. I wish we had more time, but for now, I just want to thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ivy. Let's go now to Tammy from Provo, Utah. Tammy, are you there? Do we have Tammy? Well, if we don't have Tammy, we have somebody standing at the microphone here.
Hi.
So, hi, is that, that's Lori, I can
yes.
recognize. Lori, welcome
yes.
to the marathon.
Hello, Mr. Nobody.
Just nobody. If I wanted an honorific, it would be emperor. But, Lori, why don't you introduce yourself? You are an activist, is that not so, Lori?
I guess that's the way I would identify myself, or others choose to. I'm also a friend of Jose, who spoke a few minutes earlier
uh-huh.
from Springfield, Massachusetts. And I was also a part of Sanctuary City, or Tent City, as a supporter. And I came into this environment of tents early spring and was able to be a part of it all until it ended in middle of November. And it was a community of about 80 people, which shifted, their numbers shifted with different people coming in and other people dropping out at certain times. And it was really quite incredible, and it led me a lot to listen in on the city politics of Springfield and to come to understand that apparently in Springfield, homelessness has grown by 42% in the last 5 years. However, there has been no quantitative rebuilding or building of new facilities for people to live in those 5 years. And Springfield has been suffering great financial hardships, which probably a lot of cities in America could also find parallels. I know upstate New York has tremendous economic problems.
You can say that again.
And
what about the five-year program, the mayor
in
your area?
The five-year program?
Yeah, we have a five-year program by so-called Mayor Bloomberg, and the other mayors throughout the United States are supposed to have a 10-year program, and some have adopted it or broke it down to five. Have you heard about that?
Nothing.
Well, that's the new deal with all the mayors throughout the United States, and the head of the mayors was the mayor in Boston, and our Mayor Bloomberg has a five-year concoction, which is Fantasy Island.
And what does it achieve?
A five-year program is supposed to have more housing and less homeless people in New York. But the real deal is out of sight, out of mind, because they're trying to have a new stadium and they're trying to also get the Olympics here in the year 2012. So what they're doing is talking about a whole lot of things, but it's Fantasy Island. They want to get people further out, upstate, or as far out of Island as can be. But yet they have this program with the mayors throughout the United States. The majority has a 10-year program. Try to look into it. You'll see it. They have it there also.
I will. Well, one of the points also I was going to make is that hopefully that there's going to be greater connections made between this community of activists. Like I kind of identify myself once again with that term, and I alongside of the so-called peace movement or the anti-war movement, to bring also into clear and sharp focus domestic problems that we're experiencing right here in our own country, and make those connections between the existing homelessness and how much money has been allocated over the last several years just for the war in Iraq.
Well,
like,
that's Bush's program. That's his thing. You have more people following him because he has the upper and the upper middle class following him.
Let me ask Israel something. Israel, I know you're going to be writing a book on the homeless movement, which we can't go into everything now, but why don't we just start with one question. Is there a homeless movement?
The homeless movement is scattered and fragmented, but I think that it's important to recognize that there are movements in the country surrounding ideological whatever a group's ideological belief system may be, but the movements happening on the streets are based in survival. And in certain communities throughout the country, we're seeing an organized arm of people experiencing homelessness that are organizing to change the conditions of their lives. And I think you can see that in the tent city movement. You see that with the street newspaper movement. You see that with advocacy groups and groups that are looking at entrepreneurial approaches that are basically taking, we need to get over the hump and start looking towards solutions. And some of the solutions that groups that are coming up with on the West Coast are citation relief, you know, basically having sanctioned tent cities, newspapers through education, and a multitude of other things. So you're seeing a fragmented movement throughout the country. It's just important for those communities to recognize that they're happening throughout the country. And once they're linked, you're able to shake some of the local governments. But in order to make true systematic change, we have to change the culture around homelessness and the way the community is dealing with it, and say that there are solutions out there for people on the streets, and not just be throwing rocks at the system, because the system is big and it's strong, and it, we can throw as many rocks as we want, but we have to get over the hump and look towards solutions.
Lori, I want to try and take one more call, so I just want to thank you very much, and people should know you drove down all the way from Springfield to participate and to help out, and I thank you very much for your contribution, very much. Okay, we just got a minute, but let's see if we can get Helen from upstate New York on for a minute. Helen, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Helen. We're down to like 40 seconds or something, but
okay.
What's on your mind?
While you're on time instead of 3 o'clock in the morning, why don't you talk a little bit about what the administration has done to public housing, Section 8 housing, during the first 4 years of the administration, and what they propose to do in the next budget, and what people who are listening to your show, both homeless, anyone political who's interested, or anyone who just has some empathy for the cause, could do to contact the
Let me just tell you this answer in 20 seconds, because we're out of time. People should understand that the Bush administration has proposed cuts in Section 8 housing vouchers so deep that people who were homeless and got into homes would lose the housing that they finally got. Congress has not gone along with this, but that is what the Bush administration has proposed. Is that what you're getting at, Helen?
Why don't you encourage people to contact their Congress people, because the budget that they're proposing now is demanding more cuts.
Well, okay, you've just done it. Helen, we're out of time. I want to thank you very much for raising that point. Indio, do you have a last 10-second comment you want to make?
In New York, there's no more Section 8. It's done away with.
You are listening to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, produced in conjunction with WPKN Community Radio in Bridgeport, Connecticut. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of the producing or participating organizations, or of the originating or affiliated radio stations. To view the webcast of this broadcast, order tapes, or contact Nobody after the show, go to www.homelessnessmarathon.org.
it's all.